Hi, everybody. My name is Pauline. I'm an alcoholic. By God's grace, the program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that, I am eternally grateful. And I have a home group, and that home group is Monday night Seal Beach Speakers Meeting, and I have a sponsor, and she has a sponsor. And those are the things that I need to be a member in good standing in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd like to thank Pat for inviting me to come to this meeting. I have been coming to Old Town for a lot of years, and I've been to just about every place you've moved to, and I'm here to tell you, this is the best. This is the best. So you guys have really landed in a great spot. This is a wonderful meeting hall, and it's really neat. It's funny, you come back to a meeting, and it's the faces are so different. You know, it's kind of like Shakespeare said, you know, the stage is the same, it's just the faces that change. And it's really neat to be here. And I'm so happy Frank is 35 years, to have my friend Frank celebrating 35 years of sobriety. And I was telling him that Frank H. up in Long Beach, and they're buds. And we had his 35th today, too. So, you know, there's a lot of great sobriety around in Southern California. I mean, there's just no place on earth like AA in Southern California. And I feel so blessed to be able to be a part of that. And to be able to be at your meeting tonight, this is truly, truly wonderful. And I want to thank you again. I'd like to just kind of talk a little bit about my higher power. Frank asked me, one of the first things he said is, you haven't lost your sense of humor, have you? And what I like to talk about is that my higher power's got a great sense of humor. And I love the way that God is so gentle with us and how he helps us to get where we need to go. And I've always said I'm so grateful that my higher power is a God of mercy instead of a God of just. Because if I were to get what I deserve, I hope you're not sitting next to me. But thank God I have been given mercy in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been given a life today beyond anything I ever expected. And there's a lot of newcomers in this meeting, and I was just really happy to see all the newcomers stand up. And one of the things that I'd like to tell you is that I love being sober, and I love my life today. And the birthday people were talking about how they love their life, and I love my life today. And in 2 weeks, I'm going to be 22 years sober. And sometimes I just have to pinch myself to just believe that I'm going to be 22 years sober. And the life that God has given me is just beyond anything I ever expected. And at almost 22 years of sobriety, I am busier in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous than I've ever been. I sponsor more people than I've ever sponsored, and I'm into more service than I've ever been into. And the reason is that almost 22 years of sobriety, I have so much more to lose. I don't want to lose the life that I have today. I love this life. And you're going to hear my story, and I'm not going to come to you with one of those rags to riches stories. Mine is kind of like a riches to rags story. But the thing that I'm very convinced of tonight is I am the richest woman in the world. I have been given gifts beyond anything I ever expected. And I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was raised Southern Baptist. So I came here with a lot of old ideas about God. I had the kind of God that, in my perception, now, Clancy, I hear he's going to talk at your anniversary in a couple of weeks, and Clancy is my favorite speaker. I have learned more from Clancy from speaking, because Clancy just has a way of being able to teach alcoholism. He just talks about alcoholism, and he's got a tape out, and it's called Alcoholism, a Disease of Perception. And every time I hear that, Clancy's talking about me. And Clancy talks about alcoholism, a disease of perception. And you know, today I know that what I heard wasn't necessary what anybody said. And I can still hear my mother saying things like, Polly, wherever did you get that idea? Nobody said that to you. But I could have sworn they said that. So what I heard was these preachers talking about this God that was going to get you. And I just knew that I was never, ever going to be good enough for God. And I had this feeling about just never, ever measuring up. And I always had these feelings of total and complete inadequacy. And I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you introduced me to a new God. You told me about a God in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that lives within. And you told me how to find that God, and you said to search fearlessly. And today, God, as I understand him, expresses himself to me through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, my God's got a dynamite sense of humor. I don't know about yours, but mine does. Now, my name is Polly. I am not a Pauline or a Paula. And if your name's Polly, you're going to be teased a lot. It's got to be things like Polly Wolf's Cracker and Polly Wally Doodle all the day. Now, I'm sure none of you are sensitive, but I am very sensitive. And I don't like to be teased, and I don't like to be laughed at. But what I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is there's no negatives in God's world. It's just my perception that's negative, that everything has a positive result. And today I know that I can go into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous where there's several hundred people or more, and if somebody says Polly, I'm pretty sure they're talking to me. There's just not very many Pollys in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. I knew that I was a drunk, and I knew that I was a lush. And I used to drive down the freeways in Dallas, Texas, and I used to pray to God to have cancer or heart disease or something, because I knew I was dying and I just wanted to die of something respectable. And today I know that the disease of alcoholism is my greatest gift, because if I didn't have the disease of alcoholism, I wouldn't qualify for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything I am or hope to be, I owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Almost 18 years ago, I married Dave. Dave's last name is Pistol. My name is now Polly Pistol. I will assure you, you cannot walk around on planet Earth with a name like Polly Pistol and not learn to lighten up. So. God's got a great sense of humor. I am living, breathing proof that you can come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and not come from the disease of alcoholism. I do not come from the disease of alcoholism. The only person that ever drank in our family was my mother's father, and I will assure you he never drank like me. But today I know that I have a disease called alcoholism and that I am a real alcoholic as described in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have this family that absolutely loved and adored me. And if there's any abuse that was ever done to me, that abuse was that I was simply loved too much. Because not only did I come from parents who did not drink, I am an only child. So I was loved and adored always. Now, when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of women, and these women have had some horrific things happen to them, things that should never, ever happen to little girls. And I would sit in rooms and I said, I could understand why they're an alcoholic, but why am I an alcoholic? I mean, I can understand them doing those things, but look at me. I had this really good life, and here I am, and I have the disease of alcoholism. And I know today that I have a disease, and that disease is alcoholism. And I am so grateful today that I know that the disease of alcoholism is spiritual in nature. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I am suffering from a spiritual malady. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I am separated from the sunshine of the spirit. Today I know that I have a disease of the soul. I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I absolutely had a hole in my soul. I absolutely was dead inside. And I know the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that if I am suffering from a spiritual malady, nothing is enough. You can't love me enough. You can't give me enough. You can't do enough. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says there's not enough for a person like me. There simply is not enough. And I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I would have absolutely sworn that nobody loved me. Yet, having looked upon my life through the steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I know that I was very, very loved all my life. The thing about it was, I had so much spiritual illness, I could not feel that love. And I'm so grateful today that I know that I'm suffering from a spiritual illness, and I know that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous gives me a spiritual solution through the 12 steps, the fellowship, and the service of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. At 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. I just knew that I had found my knight in shining armor, and we were going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. Now, I married a SAC pilot, and this man was going to be gone, and he was going to be gone for years at a time. And I was going to have to learn to be responsible for myself. And I have never, ever wanted to be responsible for myself. I have never wanted to live life on life's terms, and I have never wanted to be responsible for myself. I have always wanted you to be responsible for me. I've always wanted you to make me happy. I love what Clancy says. Clancy says that we're people who have to be treated special just to feel average. And if you don't treat us special, then we feel rejected. And you know, that was me. I was one of these people, you know, that would kind of puff up. That's what we call it in Texas, puff it up. And then it was your responsibility to find out what was wrong with me. And then it was your responsibility to make me happy. And if you didn't, you didn't love me. So I truly understood that. Now here I am, a whole ripping 18 years old, and I've always felt like I am uneducated. And I've always felt like that I was really stupid and that everybody else was much smarter than me. And these were those feelings of total inadequacy that I've always had. And here I was an Air Force officer's wife, and I was going to have to learn to give these dinner parties, and I was going to have to go to these cocktail parties and these luncheons, and I was going to have to do all these right things and have the right manners. And I just felt absolutely so intimidated and so totally inadequate. I just felt like there's just no way I can ever, ever measure up to these women. How can I possibly do this? And I took a drink of alcohol. I don't recall when I first took a drink of alcohol. I don't remember it. My husband remembers his first drink, and he said he chased that feeling till he came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't remember that. I just know that I took a drink of alcohol. And it seemed like if I could take a drink of alcohol, then I could carry on a conversation. And somehow I didn't feel so stupid. And when I picked up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the doctor's opinion, it described me when it talked about alcohol. It said that alcohol gave me that sense of ease and comfort. And that's what it was. I wasn't looking to get drunk. I wasn't looking to be out of control. I didn't want to party down. I've never even drank in a bar. I just wanted to have that feeling of ease and comfort. Around about 1962, my husband and I were stationed at a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine. And it's way up at the tippy top of Maine. And I've got these two little kids. I don't have a clue how to be a parent. I don't know what to do with these little boys. It's 50 below zero. I can't send them out to play. And I'm having a nervous breakdown every 20 minutes because I don't know what to do with these kids. And I go to an Air Force doctor, and he says, take these. And from 1962 until 1977, when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I drank alcohol, and I took Librium and Valium and Seconal and Nemutol. And if you take those kind of drugs and you drink alcohol, you're not an active alcoholic. I call myself a couch potato alcoholic. I did my dying on my living room sofa. I just laid there and watched soap operas and listened to Joan Baez sing the blues. One of the things that I believe, that there's a chapter in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think too many times that chapter is skimmed over, and that chapter is called The Family Afterwards. And I believe that anybody who lives with a practicing alcoholic is affected by the disease of alcoholism. I believe that the disease of alcoholism absolutely traumatizes children. And my children have been traumatized by a disease called alcoholism. I am the kind of mother that they do not let kids stay with today. They do not let mothers like me keep their children. Because, you see, I am a child abuser. I am the kind of mother that emotionally, physically, and spiritually abused her children. I am a mother that absolutely, blatantly neglected her children because of a disease called alcoholism. I could not take care of my children. I could not get my children up in the morning and get them to school. I could not get them fed. Those are what alcoholic mothers like me do. So I have a son that's in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and when I talk about being a couch potato alcoholic, that's not the way he sees it. Because, you see, my son talks about being a little boy, and his mother's passed out on the sofa, but he doesn't know that she's passed out. And this little boy walks back and forth in front of that sofa, and he's absolutely gripped with terror because he's certain that his mother is dead and his dad is gone, and he absolutely doesn't know what to do. That's the disease of alcoholism. This disease absolutely takes the souls and rips them out of our children. I'm so grateful today to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. I am so grateful for strong sponsorship. I'm so grateful for the steps, because I was told to work the steps, to take an inventory, to look at my character defects, make a list, and be willing to make amends. And I was told that I needed to look at myself square in the mirror and say, Polly, you are a child abuser. And then I was supposed to sit down with my children and tell them how sorry I am that I am a child abuser and what I did to their lives. And I was told, Polly, you sit there and you listen to whatever those boys have to tell you. And believe me, they had a lot to tell me. And that the only thing that you get to say is, I'm sorry that that happened to you. I was not one time to say, you shouldn't feel that way. I'm not like that anymore. I was to listen and just tell them how sorry I am that that happened to them. I'm so grateful for this program. I'm so grateful for good sponsorship. I'm so grateful that I could do the second part of the Serenity Prayer and have the courage to change the things I could. Because by taking that kind of action because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a relationship today with my two sons that is beyond anything I ever expected. And it's all because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd just like to tell you some things that brought me to this program. I didn't walk into Alcoholics Anonymous and say, geez, there's a coffee pot, I think I'll get sober. I ended up having a car wreck in Irving, Texas that would bring me to treatment for the first time. And I entered a treatment center in Euless, Texas, and it was a county detox. I will guarantee you it was no fancy jitter joint. It was a county detox, and I loved Alcoholics Anonymous. I loved the smiles on your face, but there was just something down inside of me that said, Polly, people like you just don't become alcoholic. And while I was in that treatment center, I had, you know, one of those jitter house romances where sick falls in love with sick, and you walk off into happy destiny. But we walked off into happy destiny for 58 days, and I was brought back into that treatment center more dead than alive. And I reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Because, you see, now I knew what the problem was. The problem was sobriety. I knew that there was no way that I could live sober. I couldn't live sober with what had happened in that hotel room. I could not live sober with the kind of mother I'd become, the kind of daughter I'd become, the kind of wife I'd become. I knew that I could not live sober with the kind of woman I had become. And you see on that tape that Clancy has, he talks about the disease of alcoholism. And he says that alcohol doesn't have a thing to do with the disease of alcoholism. And you see, I knew that I could not live sober inside my own skin. I knew that. And you see, I had just defined the disease of alcoholism. The disease rests in the mind. I have not had any alcohol or any funny pills for almost 22 years, and I still have alcoholism real bad. The disease rests in the mind. And if I don't keep suiting up and showing up for meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, my thinking will lead me to drinking. Because, you see, if I don't have you, if I don't have something that takes care of those feelings inside of me, I am one of those people that has always been ruled by my feelings. I'm so grateful today that I understand that if I take a set of actions contrary to the way I feel, those actions will change my thinking, and my thinking will change my feelings. And I never, ever knew that until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I knew that I couldn't live sober inside my own skin. And I left that detox center, and I got a bottle of scotch, and I got a bottle of Valium, and I checked into a motel. I don't believe that there's anybody in this room that doesn't have an angel in your life, somebody who leads us to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had such a lady in my life, and she didn't know anything about alcoholism, but she loved me. And that day she said something came over her, and I know today that that was God working in my life through her. And she drove around until she found my car parked outside this motel. And she opened, I hadn't shut the door all the way, and she opened it up. And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. By God's grace and His divine intervention, I am sober today, and by no other reason. And I'm so grateful that I am in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And on April the 11th of 1977, I entered a treatment center in Dallas, Texas, and I had been court committed by a Fort Worth judge. It seems like in 1977, the state of Texas didn't take too kindly to people who tried to take their life. And I'm so grateful for that intervention. And I entered that treatment center, and my life has never been the same. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and a Vision for You says that if I stay spiritually fit, that great events will come to pass. That's the great fact for us all. And I'd like to spend what time I have left in telling you about my great events that have come to pass. My life is beyond my greatest expectation. I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did what you asked me to do. I got a sponsor. I got into service. I worked the steps. And I did the things that I was told to do in this program. And I've had things that have happened in my life that have been beyond anything I ever expected. When I was 3 years sober, I married another member of this fellowship. And Dave and I had been best friends. And we often said, you know, if we'd have known we were going to get married, we'd have never told each other the things we told each other. And neither one of us knew how to have a relationship. I'm Dave's fourth wife. And I'd been married for 22 years, so I knew how to hang in there. And Dave and I both knew how to take a hostage, but we didn't know how to have a relationship. And we began to find some heroes in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we began to do what they said to. And Dave and I learned things like pick up the traditions and work them in your relationship. And we learned that each of us needs to plant ourselves firmly in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we each need to work a program, and we each need to have a sponsor, and our sponsor can't be each other. And we began to take this program, and we began to apply this in our relationship. And I'm so grateful, because we've had 18 years of an absolutely fabulous marriage, and for that I am so grateful. And Dave and I are totally different. I'm one of these people that just yaks all over the place, and Dave's one of these guys that likes to throw a 40-pound pack on his back and walk around on top of mountains. And Dave and I just look at each other and say, I just say, Dave, you go be the very best Dave you can be. And Dave says, Polly, you go be the very best Polly you can be. And what we do is we bring the best back to our marriage. About 6 years ago, we had some things happen to us that, you know, in the scope of things, it's not such a big deal, but at the time, it certainly felt like a big deal. And Dave lost his job, he's a computer scientist. We didn't think that was such a big deal, but it seemed like it became a big deal, and he couldn't find a job, and nobody was looking for a 57-year-old computer scientist. And, you know, we said, oh, my God, if he didn't find a job pretty soon, we're going to lose our house. And he didn't find a job, and flying my fist to God, you know, how can this be happening? Don't you see how much service I am in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? Don't you see how many people I sponsor? You see, I had this kind of distorted ego that thought somehow or another I needed to be rewarded for staying sober. And Dave and I have learned a lot of lessons through this experience. And we found out that you can stay sober and have your house foreclosed on, that you can stay sober and you can file bankruptcy, and you can stay sober and you can have all these things happen. And it looked like a year ago it was going to happen again, because Dave never really got a very good job, but he did work. And the company he was with was going to, they were selling and they were closing down. And lo and behold, Dave ended up the 1st of April last year getting a really good job, and now he's 62. And so you just never know. But the neat thing about it was, is Dave and I looked at each other and said, you know, God's going to take care of us. We've already been there and we've already done this. And we knew that no matter what, it was going to be okay. And it's amazing the kind of lessons you learn. And I don't know about you. I hope you learn. I hope you get to have life, you know, things just go really smooth. But I'm just one of these people that, you know, just let me get a little pain in my life. And I'm on my knees every night. I'm dusting off my big book. And I'm calling on the man, you know. And it's like pain. Bill said pain is the touchstone of all spiritual growth. And I'm really grateful for the experience. But I want you to get something clear. I am not so spiritual that I like being poor better than I like having money. So I just don't want anybody to get that mixed up. At any rate, Dave's working and things are good and those are great events that are coming to pass. And when I was 6.5 years sober, my youngest son called me on the phone and he said, Mom, I want what you have. And 6.5 years before, I was supposed to attend a function at his school. And he said, Mom, don't you dare show up at my school because I am ashamed of you. And 6.5 years later, he wants what I have. And January 3rd, 1999, my son celebrated 15 years sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm here to tell you that's a great event that's come to pass. And he's married to a lady named Kelly, and she's 9 years sober. And we've had a lot of fun, and we've been able to celebrate a couple of Bill W. family reunions, one up in Seattle and one here in San Diego, as a family in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we've been able to do conferences together. We've been able to recover as a family. My oldest son is not an alcoholic, but my oldest son is one of these people that I could really understand. Because I'm a person who's had depression in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I knew Russ's desperation because Russ suffered from depression. And I knew what it was like to cut yourself up, because if I could hurt myself physically, then I didn't have to feel it emotionally. And I knew that my son was doing that to himself. And and Russ was the one who, I say a good Al-Anon, but Russ has not been an Al-Anon. You have to go to Al-Anon to be an Al-Anon. I guess you would call it a pre-Al-Anon. And Russ was the one who took care of me. Russ was the one that called work. Russ was the one that put me to bed. And, you know, what would a good Al-Anon do if their alcoholic sobered up and married a practicing alcoholic and she sobered up, so he divorced her? And to make a bunch of long stories short, Russ ended up marrying this lady and they moved to New Jersey. And that's when a hell began. And my son started trying to take his life. And he tried to take his life 6 times. And I was devastated. And I kept being told in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, Polly, you're going to have to turn your son over. And you're going to have to just go to meetings because you may be the only big book that these boys ever read. And I just was so devastated because I just didn't know what I would do if my son actually took his life. And I was doing something just like I'm doing today, tonight, except it was on a Saturday morning and it was in Georgia. And my daughter-in-law called me on the phone and she told me that my son was in the hospital one more time. He put a pair of scissors in his stomach. And I thought I was going to die. And I got up to talk that morning and I was just so torn down. I couldn't even hardly give the talk. But you see, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And this man walked up to me after the meeting was over. And he says, young lady, you and I need to talk. And we need to get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we need to get into the chapter to the agnostic. And you need to know that God either is or he isn't. He is either all things or he's nothing. And that what God does with his kids is none of your business. And Russ is God's kid. And I was able to release my son that day. And I'm here to tell you that my son hasn't tried to hurt himself in over 9 years. And there was a couple of people that came up here. I spoke at the San Diego Roundup, and it was like 10 years ago. And the morning that I talked that weekend that I talked at the Roundup was the first weekend my son tried to take his life. And I was having a really hard time at the San Diego Roundup that morning when I tried to talk. But you know, God in his infinite mercy has given me this son. Now you see, I wanted Russ to go to Al-Anon, and I wanted him to do this, and I wanted him to do that. That was my plan. But God had another plan. because you see, Russ has found a way, and he's found a way through his church, and he's found a way to be happy. And he and Cheryl have two little girls. They have a little 2.5-year-old named Katie and an 8-month-old little girl named Jessie. And I babysat this morning. I babysit every Sunday morning if I'm in town. I babysit every Wednesday and Thursday night. That's what I get to do as a grandma. And Katie comes up the door, and she knocks on the door, and I open it up, and she goes, Mama. She can't say grandma, so she says, Mama. And, you know, I look at that little girl, and I think, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Thank you, thank you, thank you, God. Because what if Russ would have done what he tried to do, and I wouldn't have these little girls? Great events that have come to pass. On May the 23rd, 1993, a great event came to pass, and his name is Ryan David Klingerly, and he's my grandson. And I'm here to tell you that he was, I thought the heavens had opened up when that little boy came. He was the cutest thing. He's got blonde, curly hair, and everybody would say, oh, Polly, he looks just like you. And that would just, you know, and if you were Ryan, we found out that Ryan was profoundly deaf. And I couldn't believe it. I had my fist at God. How could you do this to me? Don't you see how many people I sponsor? Don't you see how much service I make? But you see, one more time, my perception of reality was distorted. You see, I didn't know what God's plan was for our family. I didn't know what God's plan was for Ryan. And because of this little boy's deafness, I mean, here's a family that has been torn apart. Kelly's family's been torn apart by a disease called alcoholism. James's family's been torn apart by a disease called alcoholism. But because of this little boy, we've been brought together. Because if we're going to communicate with this little boy, we've got to learn to sign. And what happened is our family began to learn to sign. And all of a sudden, a whole world opened up for me. And I'm so happy when I come here and find you have a signer. Because, you see, I know a lot of people who are deaf in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know a lot of people who are deaf out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't know anything about the community of the deaf until I had this little grandson. And I wish you could see what you've done with these kids. Because you see, when you have a child that has special needs, it takes a lot. And because you've taught Kelly and James to be relieved of the bondage of self, when it comes to Ryan and what he needs, it's never too much, it never costs too much, and it never takes too much time. They're always there and willing to do whatever this little boy needs. The beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous. And now we have Chris, and now we have Maddie. So, you know, here I am, a grandma of 5. My husband says they can quit now. We've had enough. But at any rate, these are the things that have been given me, and I had no idea that I could be given all these beautiful gifts in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm one of these people that believes in this program. And if nobody's told you today you make a difference, please believe me that you make a difference. And you know how I act when I walk outside these doors is really important. The 12 steps says that I practice these principles in all my affairs. I'm going to get on a freeway and I'm going to drive. And when I drive on that freeway, I want to drive courteously. Because if anybody would happen to know that I'm an alcoholic, I want them to know that I am a sober alcoholic and that I'm a good example of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, you see, they told me a long time ago that I might be the only big book anybody ever reads. So I know that practicing these principles outside of these rooms is a big deal. And I want to share a little story with you about that. When Katie was a year old, we were going to get one of these big submarine sandwiches and have a birthday party for her. So I went to Subway to order the sandwich. And, you know, I'm in there, and these two gals over here in the corner, and they're just talking. Now, what I feel like doing is doing one of these, excuse me, you know, like, won't you pay attention to me? I'm a customer here. But I took an action contrary to the way I felt, and I didn't do that. And pretty soon this gal comes over, she says, oh, hi, I didn't see you. And And so she, you know, takes my order and she says, "In your name," and I said, "Polly Pistol." And she says, "Oh my God, I heard you speak up at Woman to Woman. Now wouldn't it have been wonderful if I had a touch of action the way I felt? Wouldn't that have been a great example of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous?" So it's really important how I act in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's real important to me that we protect this program. It's real important to me that these rooms are just like they were when I got here over 21 years ago. It's really important that these rooms are just like they were when James got here over 15 years ago. Because you see, I think my grandson Ryan's going to need you. And I'm going to tell you a little story about Ryan. When Ryan, we needed to find out the degree of Ryan's deafness. And in order to do that, we needed to put him to sleep so that they could run some tests on him. So they gave him the medication and nothing happened. And they gave him the medication again and nothing happened. And they gave him the medication the third time and he woke up and he was doing this. And that's more in sign language. So guard this program as if your very life depends on it. By God's grace, I have had the opportunity to be able to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to two women who were hearing impaired. Now, I am very slow, but deaf people don't care. They have no problem understanding me. I just have a hard time understanding them because they sign really fast. But they have no trouble understanding me. And you see, had it not been for Ryan, I would not have had that opportunity. The gift that I have been given in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous are beyond my expectations. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, "Left to my own devices, I'll self-destruct." The very best I could do for me is to get me pronounced dead on arrival. But thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I've had life breathed into me. And that life has made me the woman I am today. And today, I don't always feel like I'm enough, but I feel like I'm enough a lot more today than I used to. And today, I am a woman who is self-supporting through her own contribution. I am a woman who's loved one man for 18 years with all my heart, and I have been faithful and true to that one man. And I couldn't do that before I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I have a commitment, I keep that commitment, even if I have to send somebody else past to talk. But those things are the things that you've taught me how to do in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I always felt like such a failure as a mom. And a few years ago, my son said to me, "Mom, you're the mom we always wanted you to be." And that's a great event that's come to pass. And my son, who's recovering in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I get the opportunity to talk to James just about every day. And I was talking to him this morning, and James says, "Well, what are you guys going to do?" And Frank Honeycutt is his AA sponsor, too, along with my husband's. And I said, "Well, we're going to Frank's big 35th AA birthday, and then I'm heading down to San Diego to speak at Old Town." And he says, "Mom, you be sure and tell all those people at Old Town that your son James loves you." And that's a great event that's come to pass. God bless. I love you, too.